So I guess this is my time. My pictures are going around. You all set?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Steve. I'm an abstinent compulsive eater. As I like to say, I'm Stevie, you know, a man. Don't eat from a garbage can. Surrender my will away and measure my fill. I'm Stevie, you know, a man. Ta-da. And I live that, and then I have an elevator pitch, which I also like to do, which is what I was like, what happened to change me, and what I'm like now. I was fat, angry, and in charge. I did have a spiritual experience, a series of them, and now I am an appropriate weight, accepting, and in touch. And as was pointed out to me, I've been in program since 2002. I lost all the weight by October of 2003. Exactly the nature of my recovery was unclear to me. And when I made the comment to somebody who'd been around a long time that I don't really see any changes in myself particularly, they just looked at me and said, "Oh yeah, there are changes." And this is a person I did a lot of service with, so I accepted that as being true. I grew up in Jackson Heights, Queens, New York, 11372. There's a traffic jam in Harlem that's backed up to Jackson Heights, car 54, where are you? That was our claim to fame, that and the drug trade. Those were not my drugs. My drugs were legal and sold over the counter or out of the freezer case, more likely. And I grew up around the corner from Harry's candy store, where every day after elementary school, we walked home, and we all sat down at the counter, and we had, you know, sugary drinks, while our parents had coffee and cigarettes in the booth. And that was our normal day. An exceptionally good day was a day walking to school past the bakery, when the baker would be standing outside with a tray of cookies. It happened once a year if you were lucky. But every single day, I was just dreaming that that was the day when the guy was there with the tray. I was born with this disease. I absolutely believe it. Growing up in Jackson Heights, we had a cookie jar. And my father had this disease as well. And the cookie jar sort of had a reorder point at the halfway point. You know, when it got half empty, more cookies were put in. And that's just the way it was. It was always food in the house. I was never, ever, my food was never limited. There were times when I was encouraged, I was incentivized to lose weight through money. I was offered $1 a pound when a buck bought you 10 candy bars. Yeah, I never got them. I didn't. It was just not what I could do. I had no internal control for food. I wasn't the smartest kid in class, but I was among the top, and I was always the class clown, and that's sort of how I got my attention, but I was never comfortable in my skin, and the way I dealt with it was by eating food. I didn't date until college, and then not much at all. So I was always outgoing and extroverted, but I could never develop those interpersonal skills. Those began to develop 14 years ago through recovery in this program. So my experience with OA is happened in two phases. I used to be married. I'm not anymore. And when I was living, my wife and I met in college. And, you know, I had a thing for her, but she didn't have a thing for me. But after college, I kept in touch. And one time we got together, and it was at a time when we were both heavy. I didn't know that she had struggled with this her life like I had. And when we were heavy, we hit it off. But we became eating buddies. we ended up moving in together and moving to Cambridge for my work. And she found in January of 1987, I think it was, Overeaters Anonymous. And this was Gray Sheet back in the day. And she went and she thought that I should go too. So I didn't want to go, but being a people pleaser, I went. And I went to two meetings a week. I picked up the Gray Sheet. I did the food plan. I came in at 254 pounds. And I left at 177, thinking I was cured. I might have kept going to meetings in Cambridge if we had stayed there, but we moved out to Ashland. And I went to a meeting as soon as I got out there, but it was so completely different from the meeting in Cambridge that I just never went back. Now, I never really accepted the program in Cambridge. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't work the steps. The reality is I was not a member of Overeaters Anonymous at that time. I was a guest. Overeaters Anonymous has one requirement for membership, and that's a desire to stop eating compulsively, and I didn't have that. I had a desire to lose weight, which I did. I had no desire to get at the underlying causes and conditions of my disease. Time passes. I have a daughter. I'm going, I have to lose weight for my daughter, you know, because the weight's going on all this time. I left OA in 88. My daughter was born in 92. I hadn't put all the weight back on by then, but it was coming on at a steady sort of linear rate. And I have to lose weight for my daughter, and I didn't. And it just kept coming on and coming on. And in May of 2002, I went to the doctor, and she put me on the scale. And she said I weighed 306 pounds. And she said she wanted to send me to Mass General Weight Center. And it's called the Weight Center. It's not called the Weight Loss Center, which is, I think, is interesting. And I said, you know, I don't want to do that. I want to do something else. She said, fine. So I went home, and I went on the Internet, and I bought a diet book. And being fundamentally a cheap bastard, this diet required that you eat these bars and a piece of fruit for meals and then have a healthy dinner at supper time. The assumption that I knew what the hell a healthy supper was kind of... I mean, the truth is I knew what it was. I just wasn't capable of doing it. But I stocked up on the bars and I brought them into work and I said, I'm starting today. And I had one... I had whatever the breakfast was, and then for lunch I had the bar and a piece of fruit, and I go, I'm still hungry, and these are really good. So I had another one, and I had enough bars for the week. And on Tuesday, I had no bars. So it was terrible. Come July, so I think my weight went above the 306, but that doesn't matter. Come July, I was taking a week off to take my daughter to water parks, and... I knew that at 300 pounds, I couldn't go on the big rides. There was a 250-pound weight limit. So I said, she can go on the big ones. I'll go on the lazy river with the other fat people, and that'll be fine. And we were going to do that starting Tuesday. And on Monday, I went to a gentle yoga class at the Y where I was a member. And it was yoga, but it was false advertising on the gentle. There was really no instruction, and I just tried to do what the instructor did. And on Tuesday, I was essentially immobile. I got up and I couldn't move, so I went to a chiropractor. And the chiropractor started to straighten me out. But that event really gave me the gift of desperation. What I did that day is I reached into my dresser drawer, where for 14 years, or thereabouts, in my top drawer, I had a faded purple folder, and inside that was the food plan that I had used back in 1987. And I pulled that food plan out, and in the cupboard was this old brawn scale with the dial that goes around the outside. And I took that out, and I started weighing and measuring my food. And I went to the chiropractor every single day that week to get straightened out, and like twice the following week. And every single day, I weighed myself on his scale, and every single day my weight went down. And it went down dramatically in the beginning because I went from eating this to eating this. And then I got the gift, and I went, these are higher power moments. These are the spiritual experiences, which I didn't recognize as to be that at that time. That came later. And I got the willingness to go on and look up an OA meeting, and I found one in Newton at 7:15 on Wednesday morning at the Elliott Church on Center and Church Street, I guess it is. And I went to that meeting, and I sat in a circle much like this one, and everything about an OA meeting came back to me. What was fundamentally different about that meeting was when this little old lady sitting over there where Shelley's sitting raised her hand and said she could be a sponsor, I went up to her after the meeting and asked her to be my sponsor. I told her what I wanted to do, which was to continue on the food plan that had worked for me before. And she was okay with that. It changed over time. And she was okay with that. And I was abstinent day after day until the day came that I wasn't. Company I was working for was going through bankruptcy, and I thought it was my job to keep people happy by bringing in things from the bakery every day. So I did. And which was fine to begin with, but it wasn't fine to end with. And over time, I started adding little bits here and little bits there, and I still lost weight because, you know, when you're that heavy, little bits don't make a difference. But by October, they weren't little bits anymore, and I didn't lose any weight in October. It was my job to bring the leftovers in from Halloween, which I did, and I put them out on the table by the receptionist's desk. I forgot to mention, we had no receptionist because we'd laid her off, so basically it was unsupervised. And I paid for it, so I figured I was just going to grab some and go to my office, and that was that. So I went to grab it, and the serenity prayer popped into my head. God grant me the serenity. And I walked past the bowl. And I have not had to go back to the bowl since that time, about November 4th of 2002. And after that, I began. It took me a little while, but I asked somebody in the HAL program to do the 30 questions with me, which I did, which got me through the first three steps. And then I got stalled, and I didn't understand why I was stalled, so I asked somebody else for help on step four, and I sat down with her, and we talked, and she sort of laughed, and she said, "Well, I got bad news. You really haven't taken step two or three." So we, you know, ripped off the stripes and made me a private again, and I went back to step two. And I wrote every day on step two, and I used the AA book, Came to Believe. And I read one story a day, and I wrote on it. And sometimes it was, this is just a bunch of religious pablum, and I can't relate to anything here. And that was my writing for the day. And then the next day, there was something in it that I could relate to that worked for me, and I wrote on that. And I did that every day until I could take step two honestly and believe in a power greater than myself that could restore me to sanity. And then step three wasn't so hard. Step four, I still was a little bit stalled. What I needed, I discovered I needed was discipline around it, timetables, deadlines, and people to do it with. So I ended up doing a dedicated step study with deadlines with other men on the telephone. And I hated it. I didn't like it. I didn't like being on the telephone. I didn't like that. But it got me through it. I had deadlines. Perfection wasn't a requirement, and I got through it. And we took all 12 steps. And that was great. I felt a sense of accomplishment and a sense of relief. But I didn't get out of it what I hear other people say they got out of their step five, this incredible lifting when they turned it over. And so I found myself with a new sponsor who I met doing service out in Albuquerque. And he was going to ask me to sponsor him, but I asked him first. And we did that. He took me through the steps. And he's in Indiana. I'm not. And we met. I was in Chicago for work 1 week. And we met up one day. He drove a couple of hours. And I took a train a couple of hours. And we met. And I gave him my step five. And it was, or most of it. And it was at a community college that he just happened to find while driving around. In the building with the cafeteria that had salad for 24 cents an ounce. So, I mean, we were golden. And we just sat there all day long and did this. And I felt an incredible relief from that. I'd heard the stories about how you feel when you give away a step four and five, and I didn't believe it until I did it and experienced it. And it was remarkable. So that's my pitch for step work. Let me talk a little bit more about step two and why it was so hard. Five left? Thank you. Let me talk a little bit more about step two and why it was so hard for me. I am an atheist. I came here as an atheist. I remain one today. But, as in so many things, my atheism has changed. I've changed from a flaming atheist. A flaming atheist is an atheist that thinks anybody who believes is an idiot. To an atheist, which is just, this is, I don't believe in the concept of a creator, but I know that I'm not in charge. And that everything I know about God, I have learned in this program through working the steps. And my favorite step is step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand him, seeking only knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry that out. And for me, it comes down to a very simple thing. God's will is knowing the next right thing to do, which for me comes in the quiet moments when I'm chopping the vegetables or when I'm driving or when I'm walking or when I just sit quietly for 30 seconds. I have come to understand that unless there's a bus rushing down the road, I do not have to make a decision this second. It can wait until the right answer comes to me. And though the answers come to me, the hard part is the power to carry that out. Because power to me is nothing more or less than willingness. And willingness is the suspension of fear. And fear is now, today, and always has been, the single biggest defect in my inventory. Every procrastination, indecision, bad choice has been out of fear. And if I can suspend fear, life gets better. And I promise you that from personal experience, life gets better. The last thing I want to share on, and I think I have a minute or two, is my absolutely favorite reading from, well, let's see, what was I going to say? I have a life whose central organizing principle has gone from fear to kindness. Which means that one day at a time, I try to be kind in all of my interactions. It drives my relationship with my ex-wife, with my girlfriend, with program, with strangers, and the foods that I choose to eat. And my favorite reading from Ford today is December 9th. What wisdom can you find that is greater than kindness? Jean-Jacques Rousseau. To paraphrase a well-known saying, I have met wisdom and I have met kindness. Kindness is better. Wisdom is profound and we are impressed by it. But kindness is both profound and simple. It warms the soul long after it is experienced. Kindness is the very heart of what it means to be human. If we are not kind to one another in Overeaters Anonymous, where then can we expect kindness? Whether we are abstaining and working the program to the best of our ability, or we are not, we belong in OA and have a right to be treated with kindness. For today, kindness to myself and others is a hallmark of recovery. I'm not perfect at this, but this is, if I'm going to have a central organizing principle in my life, that's it. I can't think of a better one. And on that, I'll end. Stop.